At age 17, Dylan DeCher couldn't help but think that he'd never really done anything with his life, as so many 17-year-olds believe. So, 2 months before his freshman year was set to begin, he deferred admission to Williams College. With the reluctant blessing of his parents, I bet, Dylan set out on his idea of the Great American Road Trip to play a round of golf in each of the lower 48 states. What began as the teenage wanderlust of a New England kid became a journey into America's heart and soul to figure out where and why golf fit in and what it means to be a young man today. Dylan DeCher learned to golf on a shoes optional par 30 course near his grandparents' house off the main coast. He is now an English major at Williams College. Junior year?
I just finished my junior year.
Okay, so you're into your senior year. Congratulations. And we welcome to the roundtable this morning. The book came out on Tuesday. It must feel good.
Thanks for having me.
It does feel good. You know, 18-year-olds, how old are you? You're 20 now?
I'm 21.
You know, for you to write a memoir, you shouldn't do that. Right? I mean, isn't that like the rule of thumb?
People have said that.
How do you feel about that argument?
I guess maybe the fact that it's not a memoir so much as it is a collection of stories at which I just happen to be at the center of.
Okay. You started this off as a blog, right? That was the idea, to go. And at what point did you start to think in high school, all right, maybe I'll wait a year?
When I decided finally to go to Williams College, which is where, you know, 10 minutes from the house that I grew up in, where my brother was a junior, where my father was a professor, I decided that first I should get out and see, you know, the rest of the world. I always had this desire for some kind of adventure. So then it came down to just what form this adventure would take. And my brother and I were brainstorming ideas at, you know, in the car ride home from vacation at about 3 a.m. And it was just one of those ideas that came up that usually then, you know, the next morning you brush away. But for whatever reason, this one stuck.
And which brings up the question of how important golf was to you in your life to begin with.
Golf was something that my brother and I had really organically grown to love. We started, you know, hacking around in my grandparents' driveways on vacations. And eventually, you know, my parents didn't play. My grandparents had basically stopped playing by the time we began to. But we really just started off as a way to spend time together, as a way to get exercise, and just really fell in love with the game.
So once you start that and you make the decision, okay, this is what I want to do, how much of it, because you had an itinerary, right? I mean, you sort of had it kind of got shot to hell, but there was a point where you knew where you wanted to be at any given time.
The general idea that I left with was counterclockwise, and that was the direction I wanted to head around the United States in. So I left in September of 2009, heading across the northern U.S. And in the fall, I knew I wanted to blitz across the northern states before the snow hit. And then I figured I would spend the winter, you know, traveling back through the south, and then in the spring back up to Massachusetts. And of course, everything that I planned out didn't really end up working that way. But that did end up being the general direction, was counterclockwise around the U.S.
And the goal was always to do the 48 states. And did you have specific courses in mind?
The goal was 48 states because on a trip like this, you wake up in the morning and I had this unique opportunity to then do whatever I wanted to. So playing in each of the 48 states was a way to at least stay on some type of track. As far as golf courses, then I wanted to play on the worst $2 municipal courses, you know, the ones with greens that are brown, rough that looks like the fairway, and just characters that then you wouldn't meet at the type of place that would be an exclusive private country club that, you know, you can't take pictures of inside.
Right.
The place where a kid like me with no connection to that type of elite world would never really have been allowed before.
So the idea was never to play the best courses of the world. The idea was just to play golf in a course, in a state.
The idea was to play the worst and the best and everywhere in between.
Okay.
I think understanding America through the lens of golf requires an understanding of both of those. I mean, I grew up in a household where, you know, golf was treated as this kind of leisure sport of the elite. And I think there are those connotations of you know, the wealthy and the white and the male play golf. So part of the journey was then to dispel that notion just to myself and to prove that, you know, there is this universal quality to golf. It's played regardless of age and race and class. And there's really a unifying power to the game.
So after your experience, how strong a case can you make for that?
I feel as though I can make a very strong case for it. Certainly the elite, the private, the wealthy is there in the game of golf. But there's something in the actual game. You know, I went out last week, played just the worst round of golf I've played in years. anyone that's listening that plays golf can relate to this. And there are two reactions that follow that. The first one is, I quit. You know, I'm not coming back to this stupid sport. And then the next reaction is, God, I got to play tomorrow.
Yeah.
I got to come out and do something better. There's a unique hope to the game of golf that seems powerful. The places that were the saddest places that I visited in America were the places that had lost hope. And golf seemed to, you know, find its way into people's lives as a way to improve, you know, the next day, the next hole, the next shot, even when the rest of their lives didn't seem to have the same upside.
And what is it about the game itself? Because you get a sense in the book that it is that sort of that time where you are out there and quasi alone that you get to sort of think and reflect.
Yeah, there was the element of, you know, playing by myself out on the golf course, but then also golf is a unique sport in that, you know, if you're playing in a foursome, these are 4 or 5 hours that you get to spend with three other people, uninterrupted by too much, except, you know, you whack a ball every couple minutes. So you really get to learn a lot more about someone else or your playing partner than you would in other sports, other arenas. Golf brings out a lot of different sides in people.
Mm. It seems early on in the process you were thinking this could be a book, right? I mean, you thought, okay, if I do this and I continue this and I make this a project, this could be a book.
I think what really cemented the idea that this could be a book was when, I started a blog to record
right.
certain things that happened to keep family and friends informed. And then a lot of people start these blogs. And the weird thing about mine was that people read it, which seems like a kind of a novel idea because, you know, people usually read these for a couple days at a time. But instead, people actually said, you know, I'm really enjoying your insights. When are you going to post next? You know, you're a week behind. Like, come on, get with the program. And people were responding well enough to the insights and the people I was meeting, the stories I was telling, and the things that I was feeling that then I felt like, you know, this should be expanded on, and this could be a book.
So you would travel, you'd get from one place to the other, you'd go, you'd play golf, and then at some point, oh yeah, I have to write about this, and you'd be in a coffee shop somewhere just
I would be in a coffee
away.
Shop, or I would be parked in my Subaru, kind of lying in the trunk, stealing Wi-Fi from the adjacent Holiday Inn Express.
where all good book contracts come from, don't they? And then when the because when you were on your the road, like you were going on radio shows and stuff, like you were talking to the media as you were doing this.
My first piece of press came on live with Jim Thompson in Spearfish, South Dakota.
There you go.
So that was it took a few months. So actually really the first half of the trip was relatively anonymous.
Yeah.
Besides this piece of press I got, you know, in South Dakota and Wyoming, I really didn't have much contact with the media and I was scrounging for food, for tea times, for places to stay. And then there was a certain arc that happened where all of a sudden then I heard from USA Today. And then, you know, I woke up in my car one day, walked into, again, the Days Inn, I think, picked up the USA Today from, you know, the floor of someone's hotel room, went out to eat my continental breakfast, which I had not earned, and opened up, and there I was on the newspaper. And so there was a real disconnect then between any media coverage I was getting and the kind of scrappy lifestyle that I was leading.
Yeah, because you slept a lot in your car, right?
I did. Probably about half the nights that I was on the road.
Yeah. And that is, I guess my question is, so when you show up at a golf course, you know, you've been living in your car and you get out, because the pictures of you, you look rather natty.
well, thank you.
So, you cleaned up for the...
I would try to clean up. You learn certain things about where you can shower. I mean, you can shower at truck stops, sometimes campsites, public beaches work well. And then if none of those are available, then you just try to stand far away from people.
And just say, oh, I'm, you know, really tough game.
But people, and just don't bring them over near your car, because then they wonder why they actually played golf with just a homeless person. But...
Did you feel homeless?
I felt very much as though the money that I brought with me on the trip was the only money that I had. So theoretically, yes, there were lifelines. You know, if I had somehow not made it throughout the year, then I would have called my parents. I would have, you know, had a way out.
Sure.
So I wasn't really homeless in that regard, but it certainly put me in the shoes of, you know, living a life in which money every day is something that you think about, in which like every meal you are trying to spend as little as possible, which was really eye-opening.
You end up, at some point you're playing on Pebble Beach. So things open up for you.
Things really opened up, to the point where near the end of the trip, it was actually hard to still get out on those $2 municipal courses because, you know, the offers were rolling in from, you know, all of a sudden I was on Pebble Beach with several assistant pros from the facility. And then I was at TPC Sawgrass where they play the Players Championship. I was at Marion Golf Club where they're having the U.S. Open in a few weeks.
Yeah.
All these places that, you know, I could have never dreamed. And now I was having to turn down offers from places like that.
And it seems like they were wooing you in some.
So okay. The travel took a strange turn where I went from talking my way into the golf courses to then the point where all of a sudden I wasn't sure who the privileged was. where then all of a sudden the kid in the Subaru was kind of the prized guest, even though, you know, I finished the last trip. I had $4 in my bank account. So
it's a weird world.
It is a weird world, and golf is a weird world, especially once you get into this country club world.
Because they're interested in, I assume they're interested in your story, but they're also interested in kind of, I would think, and without, I don't know, putting words in your mouth here, but it would seem to me in some way trying to keep alive many of the notions that you were trying to disavow at the beginning.
I think people were really attracted to the idea of youth and freedom that I had. You know, this idea that I could wake up and go anywhere, that I could kind of choose my story for that day. That appealed to, you know, the poor, the less well-off who didn't have the same opportunities, but it also appealed to, you know, I met and played with CEOs who said they couldn't be more jealous of what I was doing because, you know, I could still do anything. There's this idea of not knowing that comes up a lot in the book that's really appealing to the people that I meet and play with. And so it becomes a story that is, you know, it's about simple things. It's about American life, and it's about, you know, being young and growing up, and it's about happiness and exploring people's lives.
And so what do you talk to Phil Mickelson about?
So I got a chance to meet Phil Mickelson and walk several holes with him at the Quail Hollow Championship in North Carolina. And Phil was a little taken aback by the idea. That his first reaction was actually like, oh, where is it difficult to play golf? And Phil, of all people, should know that golf is everywhere. But for some reason, he was like, you know, are there even golf courses in North Dakota? So I wasn't sure about that reaction. Phil could do a little more traveling himself, because some of the best golf that I found was in North Dakota.
Yeah.
But that was a very surreal experience. Then again, in being inside the ropes after being in the Subaru two nights beforehand.
Is that there is no state, right, that does not have a golf course?
There is. Every state has many golf courses.
Okay, so you were never at a loss of like, oh God, where do I go now?
I was never at a loss. It was really just a matter of which type of golf course do I go to next.
Now, and you write about this some, but how concerned were you? Because you're blogging, you're writing, all of this stuff is happening. And was it, oh, I also in the process want to be a better golfer. I want to improve the game.
That was definitely a desire, but it was more of a byproduct, I think, of the traveling. Because I never really was out practicing. I didn't really go to the driving range much. It was more, how do I get to make it to my tee time, you know, in time to play? A lot of the time I ended up playing in 40 degrees and sideways rain. You know, in Minnesota, there was a big snowstorm the day I was scheduled to leave, so I played in about an inch and a half of snow at a closed golf course. So I think my game improved.
What color was the ball?
I eventually switched to a yellow golf ball, which was a little easier to find.
Yeah.
But so my creativity improved, you know, playing from the snow, from the desert, from this, you know, the sand and the cactuses and the dunes in Oregon. All these different places that I could miss the fairway and then find my golf ball. But I never took off on the trip to really be a better player.
But so when you come back, I mean, did you always know, I mean, some people could look at this and say, oh, here's a kid who's going out to take a year off to find himself. Oh, here's a kid who's going out to, you know, find what his passion is. But you sort of knew this going in. It was planned, and so it didn't, like, you didn't come back and I'm going to change my major. I'm not going to do what I originally thought I was going to do. That wasn't really your story.
I was very insistent the entire time that this was not a journey to find anything about myself. You know, people kept saying that, and I was very hard set on it not being, which of course it completely was. I mean, I was trying on people's lives like sneakers, seeing how they fit, and so in that experience I was questioning every day, you know, what made these people happy, what made me happy, and in fact I was already seemed to be doing what made me happy, which was traveling and exploring these different parts of America and these different ways that people look at the world through the game of golf.
So that's in a sociological sense, but did you know before you left, did you have an idea of what your major was going to be?
I really didn't. I ended up as an English major, so I'm an English major at Williams College now. But no, I couldn't have told you what it would be. I think maybe the writing had something to do with that, and just the idea of telling stories.
Okay. And so the idea of you being a pro golfer is not...
I joke around with my buddies a lot about, you know, after school, now we're going to take another year, and now we're just going to sit on the driving range and see what kind of pro tournaments we can get into. But there are a lot of people who are a lot better at golf than I am, year off or not. So I don't think that that's in the cards.
Jim Nance wrote a really nice blurb for the book.
He did.
Yeah. Did you meet him?
I have not met Jim Nance, although it would be great to, but, no, that's one of those things that happens once you get into the lovely world of having a publishing company, which I really happened into quite nicely.
And they came to you.
They did. I wrote a book proposal, and
it's not supposed to be this easy.
I know it's not. people have told me that, and I tell my professors about it, and they say, "Oh, great job!" And you can see maybe in their eyes that there's some sense of jealousy.
Yeah, right.
Because I did get incredibly lucky, and I, You know, I did a neat thing and I was really excited about the whole idea and people got excited for me. And that was really encouraging. And it continues to be encouraging.
But the fact is that you came up with the idea and you did it and you saw it through, and that's what worked.
That's what worked.
Yeah. So you have one more year and then...
I have one more year and I'm looking forward to taking this year and not trying to take four classes and also write a book on the side. And that's the main thing in my focus right now.
Just write some feature articles.
That would be great.
Because then there's a whole golf press, and I assume they are interested in your thoughts on different things.
Now that I've been on WAMC,
will be. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was going to ask you, the studio, not much better than the one in Spearfish.
Oh, the Spearfish. Don't sell Spearfish short. That was it.
No, I'm not spelling them at all. I'm saying theirs is probably nicer, right?
Oh no, well, this is a fun little studio. This would be a neat this would be a neat place to work every day.
Well, we certainly think so. The name of the book is 18 in America, Young Golfer's Epic Journey to Find the Essence of the Game. Dylan DeCher is going to be having a book launch party at the bookstore in Lenox this Saturday at 2 o'clock. Our good friend Matt Tannenbaum is seeing that through, and you can go. Dylan's going to be reading and signing the book and celebrating its publication. And you can find out more information about that event by going to bookstoreinlenox.com, bookstoreinlenox.com. Dylan, I wish all the luck in the world. Thank you very much. The book is just terrific. It's a lot of fun, and it's a delight to meet you and to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it.
I would just add quickly that there's also a book signing in Williamstown at Water Street Books from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday evening.
Okay, so Friday night at Water Street, and then Saturday at the bookstore in Lenox.
That's right.
Excellent. You'll be making the rounds, as it were. Dylan DeCher, thank you very much. Appreciate it. 18 in America is out this week. It is published by our good friends at Scribner.